Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
The whole staff looking nice.
CeCe's got things to say. It's going to be a good morning. Welcome into First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the aforementioned Hall of Famer, CeCe, Chris Carter. This right here is Nick Wright. Got a good show for you.
Tell me. I'm so sorry to interrupt, Jenna. There are more people. If you are a loyal, very loyal viewer of this show, there's got to be a dozen people who you've heard mentioned that you have. There's Dusty, there's Deontay, there's Brian, there's Mr. Tickles, there's Joe, there's Hub, yeah. There's Ketta, there's Pepper. I mean, we are an all-inclusive show of the people behind the scenes.
Yeah, it's a slow reveal. I mean, I'm trying to get them used to you.
Oh, okay.
And then now you change your hair up. Now you've gotten shorter since you've been on
the
show.
Gotten shorter.
I mean, yeah, you're going the other way, Nick. Bad stuff for you.
I was not going the other way.
I was trying to have a positive influence on your life.
But. Well, no, you have. I was trying to compliment you. I think it's nice.
Kudos to everyone behind the scenes who puts our great show together.
Absolutely.
Speaking of a great show, we have one for you today in front of the camera. Dak Prescott wants more money than the Cowboys are willing to offer. John Gruden's got some interesting comments. Antonio Brown, we'll get to all of that. But we start with the NBA. As the Warriors wait to see who they will face in the NBA Finals, and as we wait to see where Kevin Durant will play next year, we turn our focus back to the guy you're watching, Steph Curry. Lights out since Durant went down, averaging over 35 points per game. This earned him high praise from Charles Barkley, who said, Curry has put his name back in the conversation for best player in the world. Nick, I'll start with you. Is Steph back in the conversation for that title?
Absolutely. And he never really should have left it. Now, there had been, prior to this year, a pretty big gap between LeBron and everyone else. So it felt like everyone was fighting for second best player in the world conversation. But Steph's name wasn't even included in that one ever since Kevin Durant got to Golden State. And so, of course, he has reminded us, particularly over these last five games, of what he can do when he is the focal point, the centerpiece of an offense, the way Kawhi is in Toronto, the way Giannis is in Milwaukee, the way LeBron has been everywhere he has gone. And this is where we will go into next season with five guys legitimately vying for this title. Now, one guy might have it. If the Raptors win the championship, Kawhi's going to have it going into next year. If the Bucks win the championship, Giannis is going to have it going into next year.
But they still have to. We just can't grant them. They still have to be able to be part of that winning in such a way.
Of course. It's hard for me to think of a scenario where the Raptors or Bucks win the title without either of those guys being brilliant. But it will be Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, LeBron James, Giannis, and Kawhi all gunning for the title that will be kind of open in a way that it has not been since the first year post-Jordan. The first year after Jordan's sixth ring where nobody knew who was going to snatch that crown. Shaquille O'Neal ended up doing it, but he had to prove that over a number of years. But, of course, Steph should be in this conversation. But this is one of the sacrifices Steph made when he recruited Kevin Durant to the Warriors. When Steph was coming off back-to-back MVPs, he knew, because he's a sharp guy, the public was going to potentially forget over the course of time how brilliant he can be when it is a Steph Curry-centric offense and not a co-starring role with Kevin Durant.
And I think people need to go back on history to be able to go back when Steph, when he was MVP, those back-to-back seasons, he was considered to be one of the best players. LeBron was the best player in the world, and then they come to face off against each other. Andre Iguodala, he gets MVP. Steph is not great in the finals. So then you get to the next year. LeBron comes back down from 3-1. Then Kevin Durant. So people ask, well, where has Steph Curry been? There's a reason why he hadn't been on the top of the conversation of greatest players, is because after the MVP, when he got to the finals, he had several games where he was just an average player against LeBron. And then one of his teammates gets MVP, and then the next year, LeBron, not only regular season, but what he did in the postseason, it removed any doubt from anyone's mind who was the best player. And then KD gets there. Yep. And then something would have to happen for one of them to be considered. earlier in the playoffs, it was KD taking personal offense to Patrick Beverley and what they were doing. He showed at that point why I'm Kevin Durant, and he put on a display that would put his name at the top as far as the best player. Kawhi has sent the message in his first year with Toronto, but since Kevin Durant has been hurt, Harden's out of the playoffs, Giannis is not dominating the East the way that he should have done, the way he should be doing, or if he wants to be the best player, what he's got to be able to do. So Steph Curry, man, we would have to be missing out on a lot of good basketball if we didn't include him in that list. As far as the players next year when we start the season, Steph Curry should be mentioned. Now, in the finals, it hadn't been his best.
Correct.
In the finals. So the finals has held Steph back a little bit more even before KD got there.
And just real quick, just for some context on what Chris was saying, those 8 games for KD when he exploded post the Patrick Beverley dust up on Kevin Durant, 39-5-5 for KD, which catapulted him to the top of this conversation. 39-5-5 for KD. In the 5 games since KD went down, 36-8-7 for Steph. So very, very close under very different circumstances.
When we talk about the Warriors, and I know we're talking about the league, but when we talk about the Warriors, we always differentiate between the best player on this team and the most important player on this team. And it has been for as long as I can remember. KD is the best player and Steph Curry is the most important player. Are we starting to see maybe Steph Curry bleeding into that other category? Could Steph be the best and the most important player on the Warriors right now?
I don't. If I'm starting a basketball team, I'm probably going to start with Kevin Durant.
Oh.
Because I believe that what he does is totally unstoppable. Now, for the people in the room, my general manager, my assistant general manager, my cap guy, analytics guy, Nick Wright, VP of something, he's going to tell me what Steph does to the game. And I'd be like, man, it's just a matter of which one do you want. Steph's ability to dribble the basketball is a game changer. Because once he come across half court, he can make so many things happen. He puts so much pressure on the defense. But I'm never going to go wrong when I got the most efficient scorer in NBA history as a 7-footer who can get you a bucket, and there's no one that can match up against him defensively. That's why I go with KD, but I listen to the other arguments with Steph, which are very, very strong.
Listen, I've come to this conclusion that in team sports, if guys are on different teams, there is a difference between value, best, importance, because you do not have the experiment to be able to see them together.
Right.
So, Harden was more valuable to the Rockets this year, but don't we think Durant's actually better? With different teams, you can have that discussion. When they are on the same team, if we all agree the goal is to create the best chance of winning, to give your team the best chance to win, then best, value, and importance are all the exact same thing. So on the Golden State Warriors, Steph Curry is the best player. He is the most important player. He is the most valuable player. Now, if both were free agents, the New York Knicks would rather have Kevin Durant, because outside of them in this ecosystem, Durant probably is the more versatile player. He's certainly the better defender. He's the more all these things. But they do play on the same team. So to me, I don't think there is a reason to differentiate who's the most important and who's the best. Well, it's not a skills competition. You're trying to win the game. We know Steph contributes more to the Warriors winning than any other player can.
I believe if KD is drafted by the Warriors and they develop their system around him, and if they allow KD to dribble the ball up the court the way they Draymond, since KD's been out, you would see another level to what Kevin Durant has to do. Now, he allows Steph to bring the ball up. So in that, you see some value to Steph. But it's not as if KD can't do it. Draymond can do it. Steph can do it.
Right.
And if they were hurt and Steve Kerr turned it over to him, I believe that you would see another level to his game. So, man, it's a tough choice. For me, though, Kevin Durant is the most valuable because he's the best player.
All right. Well, Steph and KD and all the Warriors are waiting to see who they will play coming out of the Eastern Conference. Coming up, will the Bucks turn things around in Game 5? That's next on FS1. You can always check us out on the Fox Sports channel on SiriusXM. We'll be right back.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Welcome back. We'll get to some Bucks and Raptors in a second. But first, high school dunk contest. Florida State commit Malachi Wideman goes between the legs, literally over somebody, for the flush.
The East Bay jumping over a guy who's holding the ball. That's it. I think this is a new one. If we've seen it before, I can't remember it. Oh, more of this?
More from this. 2019 Oak Ridge guard Niven Glover hits up with an insane alley-oop to himself.
Now, that's a new one there. Around the back, Nick.
Under the legs. Around.
Oh.
Under the legs. These guys. I think it's a 9.5-foot rim. I think that's what's going on here.
Jenna, you know how much force it takes to generate that to be able to bring your legs up?
What's
you got an exercise
though?
Bill.
Check this out.
What is this?
It's a game winner.
Intramural sports.
Intramural.
Off
co-ed.
The inbound. Backward circus shot.
Point three left.
Game winner.
Give me that. I like that. I found this video. Well, I mean, House of Highlights did, but I saw it and I sent it to our staff. I like that.
Where is this? UC Berkeley? Where is this?
UC Riverside. Riverside.
Okay, Riverside. Okay.
Not a lot of time left on the clock. Got
I like
tap
the co-ed
it
basketball. I like that.
Someone you've heard of. Steelers practice now. Juju Smith-Schuster, peak form, makes the one-handed catch. CC,
two hands
you like
until
it?
You get in the
two
Pro Bowl. That's what I tell Randy Moss. That's
didn't he make the Pro Bowl last year?
No, Randy Moss. Then he made the Pro Bowl. I said, two hands till you make two Pro Bowls.
Okay, I feel like you're making that
clown
one.
Clown. No. That's what I did. He came back with it. What you going to say now, old man?
Okay.
Moving on to the Eastern Conference Finals. Game 5 tonight in Milwaukee. Series tied at 2 games apiece. Bucks dropped the last 2. Only the second time this season they've lost 2 straight games. They have not dropped 3 in a row yet, and they don't plan to start tonight. That is, if they can stop a hobbled and overworked Kawhi Leonard. See, we worried about the Bucks after losing 2 straight?
Yeah, I would be concerned. Yeah, absolutely, because basketball is a game of matchups. And anytime you get into these series, you see teams make playoff adjustments. And the team that continues to talk about the regular season, they miss out on a lot. And I'm concerned about the Bucks and their overall lack of experience. After the game, Giannis talked about, well, we won 60 games. We're going to get back to doing what we do. The playoffs is a whole nother beast in itself. The rules are different. How they play you is different. How people respond to the pressure and their role is different. How the coach is going to coach in this game is different. Bledsoe has been so bad in this series as far as shooting the ball. I'm talking about open shots. He has not performed well. So the thing that makes this difference and my issue with Giannis is and his lack of understanding is tonight in the game, if Bledsoe struggles in the first half, they're going to pull him out. They're going to go with Brogdon. Yep. They're going to go with George Hill. During the regular season, they would never do this. So these younger players who don't have playoff experience, they have to realize the playoffs is totally different. And I expect a sense of urgency from Milwaukee, especially in the first 12 minutes in that first quarter of the game getting back home, with the reason why they've been the best team in the NBA at home. I expect that to come back, but I'm concerned because they have players that are not playing well and they don't have the physical matchup. Because to me, Toronto has played more physical than Milwaukee has in the 4 games, Nick.
A series and a season, therefore, can turn like that. The Bucks were in single overtime and then double overtime to go up 3-0 and to end it. Then nothing else matters once you're up 3-0. You are probably going to win game 4 because the other team's spirit is broken. Mm-hmm. If not, you are winning game 5 and it's over. But they didn't. Giannis fouls out early in that double overtime. Hey, we could have been up 3-0, but it's 2-1. And then you get whooped in game 4. And now all of a sudden, it wouldn't have mattered you got whooped in game 4 had you gotten a few bounces in game 3, but you didn't. Now all of a sudden, your season can be on the brink
just like
in
that.
18 hours.
Yes.
Right? And so it is different than the regular season. There is a different level of pressure. There is a different level of all of a sudden, wait, this is, it's of course, these are all the biggest games Giannis has ever played. But now it's the biggest game he's played by a factor of 15. Mm-hmm. This is, you go up and down the roster and you're like, who do we know other than George Hill has played in these moments? And the last moment like this we saw from George Hill, he was missing a free throw to win game 1 of the NBA Finals. So nobody's got a lot of great memories in these moments on this Bucks roster. Now, I think the Bucks are the best team in the NBA. I think the Bucks are going to remind people of that today. But I also know this, even in their wins, except for in game 2, they have not been great in the first quarter. And this is a game where if you're down 27-20, That's no big. Typically, in the regular season, see, that's no big deal.
Yes.
Just wait for that Bucks third quarter avalanche or second quarter avalanche. But you start getting a little tight, start getting a little nervous, have a couple calls go against you. So there is a level of anxiety that the Bucks will be dealing with tonight that is unlike anything not only they've dealt with this season, but for nearly everyone on the roster that they've dealt with at any point in their career.
And not only that, for the Bucks, for the first couple games at least, it was just stop Kawhi Leonard because nobody else was contributing. And now all of a sudden, game four, you have Serge Ibaka. Van Vliet actually hit a couple shots. Kyle Lowry came out with big. And Kawhi didn't have such a huge game in that one. So for the Bucks, I think perhaps the Raptors bench has turned a corner. They've got more they got to deal with. Maybe their game plan changes a little bit.
It is true. That's been the story of the two-game turnaround to get it back to even. Their bench scoring had three guys score in double figures off the bench in game number four. That hadn't happened for the Raptors since 2016 in the playoffs. So you are right. The bench scoring did help. But the one thing Milwaukee has to realize in what they're doing to Kawhi, they have to in tonight's game, they have to have a certain sense of how much do we help them on Kawhi based on his health and how much do we help to get off on the others, because the bench players and those open shots hurt them. If Kawhi's not at 100%, you can't have three or four people in the lane every time he touches the ball. And also you need to realize there's three times in this playoff that Kawhi has scored 25 points or less. In all three of those games, Toronto has won those games. So even if you hold him down, they're undefeated when you hold him down. So Kawhi has just enough where he's only going to force so many bad shots. It's not game seven against Philadelphia where he shot 30-something times.
Where he had to.
Like, he's going to take his time and be able to try to make the best basketball play. Milwaukee has to realize how healthy is he, how much energy is he going to exert on the offensive end, because we know Kawhi in game number four, he was more concentrating on the defensive end.
And that's what I want to talk about here is Kawhi guarding Giannis, because that is obviously creating a real problem for the Milwaukee Bucks. And that is not an indictment on Giannis. It is a testament to Kawhi. I have said for as long as I've been following and covering basketball that I feel like the average basketball fan or analyst overrates perimeter defense and underrates rim protection. The reason I say that is it is only the special, transcendent, generational perimeter defender that can truly take away a transcendent offensive player. You can be a great perimeter defender, and if you're going up against one of the best players in the league, guess what? He's still going to get his 27 to 30. He's just going to do it slightly less efficiently. Kawhi is that outlier. Gary Payton was that outlier, by the way. We saw Gary Payton in three games of the NBA Finals against Michael Jordan. Once George Karl was smart enough to put him on Michael Jordan, hold Michael Jordan to 37% shooting, 24 points per game in the Finals, because he was that type of defender. Kawhi is that type of defender. So what this means is Giannis will never have a tougher matchup one-on-one than Kawhi Leonard right now. So you need the other guys on the Bucks to adjust. You need Bledsoe to not shoot 10% from three. You need Brooke Lopez to be a less reluctant three-point shooter than he's been since game one. And you need to clamp down defensively, because what has carried you to the 60 wins has been the unstoppable force of Giannis Antetokounmpo. He's up against a somewhat irresistible object in Kawhi Leonard's defense. Kawhi is one of the greatest perimeter defenders we have ever seen. And Giannis is not going to solve Kawhi. I believe they're going to get through.
Yeah, he's not going to solve him this postseason.
And you know what? As long as Kawhi is that type of defensive player, he is, to me, the best perimeter defender we've seen since Gary Payton or Scottie Pippen, take your pick. He is the best in a decade in this league. You're not going to solve it, but you've got to work around it to a degree.
And the reason why I don't believe he's going to solve it, because now that Giannis is in the postseason, if you look at all his numbers are down except his rebounding. With his minutes going up, his field goal percentage, almost shot 58 during the regular season, shooting 44 in the postseason. Points a game, almost 28 a game. In the postseason, almost 20. three a game. So part of this is it is an indictment on Giannis because Giannis got to keep working on his game because he doesn't have a shot between 5 and 14 feet. And when you're going against someone like Kawhi, that's what he's got to continue to develop. So as he continues to develop or he wants to be talked about as the best player in the world, that's the hole right now in his game. And Kawhi is able to take advantage of it. Kawhi's not going to block his shot, but he's going to contest. And his anticipation of what Giannis is going to do around the rim has really helped him to hold Giannis
down. And those numbers Chris gave, those are Giannis's numbers in this series with Kawhi on him, with the Raptors paying that much attention to him after he kind of ran rampant in the first two rounds. So it is a big adjustment, and it's as tough of a test as he's going to face.
All right, game five tonight, Raptors and Bucks from Milwaukee. We'll see how this one plays out. Take a break coming up. Why is LeBron staying out of the Lakers free agent search? That is next on First Things First. Memorial Day weekend, NASCAR comes home to Charlotte with 600 miles of wheel-to-wheel action. It's called the Coca-Cola 600. It's Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern, and it is only on Fox.
Second best race of the year, behind only the Daytona.
That's it. Time now for us to go viral.
Whoa.
Love, love, love.
This is good.
The latest craze is the baby face Snapchat filter.
Yeah.
Okay, so Shaq looking young and spry. Well, hold on. Kawhi couldn't avoid the trend. He's into it. Even
that's cute.
Bill Belichick got the baby face treatment.
Belichick's the only one that wasn't a cute baby.
No, hold on.
No, I'm told producers. He was never a baby, man. He was born an adult.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't set this up without producers doing this to us and watch. Let us check this out for the first time.
I'm so nervous right now.
Here we go.
Know their sport as well, if not better, than anyone else that plays, and they continue to know more. Both of these guys you can ask after a game.
And when he joined them, they became who they are now. And for him to build, increase his legacy, he needs to be able to finish out. I think he needs to still be able to play in the finals and get that third MVP in the finals and then go open up his own. Because they have the second match spot, cap spot, thanks to Kristaps trade, and the thing Rich Kleiman said there, we know is not true.
You guys are you guys are so cute. So cute, Nick. See, look at you two.
Man, now I know what the great viewers in the upstate New York area were getting 30 years ago when you started your career.
First of all, that's just me with a bigger forehead. That Snapchat thing didn't work on me. But the two of you,
Chris,
it worked on
yours
beautifully.
Is great. Yours is great. It works best on people that are clean shaven.
So cute.
Because it looks great on you. The Shaq looked hilarious.
Yeah, y'all couldn't put the little beard on the little kid and everything.
This is great.
Adorable.
That is a smart job by the folks at Snapchat, man. They did the gender flip filter, which is unbelievable.
Scary. Scary. It was
scary.
A little scary.
And this baby filter's excellent.
I look like I got on eye makeup. Look like my wife gave me a smoky eye or something.
You're right about that.
Look at
zoom
that.
In on Chris's eyes.
Look
that's a baby with
cheeks.
A little eye shadow.
But I got to tell you, Nick, adorable.
Oh, come on.
Adorable.
No, he's never been called that.
But just a filter, so let's bring it back.
Speaking of not adorable, let's talk about this. Please.
Stories to start your morning.
I love it.
Mike Budenholzer had some harsh comments for Drake, Toronto Raptors super fan, saying there's certainly no place for Drake on the court and there are boundaries and lines for a reason. Drake later had an Instagram post with a laughing face, a salt shaker, inferring that Budenholzer was a bit salty. Nick, you had some thoughts on this?
Yeah, Mike Budenholzer took a higher road than I would have taken. I would have said...
If you were the coach.
Yeah. I would have said, listen, I'm happy that the kid from Degrassi regained the ability to walk, but he needs to walk himself away from the basketball court. Being the global...
He's been practicing.
The representative ambassador for the Raptors does not give you the right to roam the sideline like you're at an AAU tournament. How many famous people, Denzel, Beyonce, Jay-Z, do we have, Jack Nicholson, that go to games and don't act a fool like Drake does?
Okay, calm down, all right? Drake's been at hundreds of games.
Mm-hmm.
He has brought a visibility to Toronto and the Raptors. He's been unfaithful. He's been faithful like who else in sports?
He wore Lakers hats. He's repped so many different teams.
You can wear a hat. Nick, you wear different gear. I see you wearing some Jordans.
Mm-hmm.
You ain't always repping LeBron.
Okay.
You're off brand.
These are
I see you got some Adidas's and everything.
Okay.
Hey, so stop.
Okay.
All right, stop. Drake got a little carried away. Don't touch the coach. Stay in a confined area. But let me tell you something. Man, when you grow up poor and you grow up a fan of the NBA, I'm getting some courtside seats and shut up, coach. Do your job. I'm here doing my job.
I'm not sure how poor
Drake
grew up, but well, it's a separate issue. Doesn't matter.
No, I'm talking about my own.
When you do it? You're just prepping for when KD's a Nick next year. You want to be able to roam the sideline.
Hey, listen, Knicks, if I'm not on the wood next year in New York, we got some problems.
Go ahead, Jenna. Sorry.
Moving on to people the Lakers could potentially have had on their staff had they actually reached out to people. Pat Riley says the Lakers never pursued him about a return to the team in a front office role. He admitted he did think about it. He did win four titles there as the head coach. Should the Lakers have pursued Pat Riley?
Nick Wright, I want you to tell America, what did Chris Carter say?
Call Pat Riley.
Yes, at the beginning.
At the first day.
Break glass in case of emergency. Anybody in basketball, if I can pick one guy to run my franchise, to get my team squared away, put me some principles in place, the foundation to start a franchise on, it is Pat Riley.
He has a house in Malibu that has a separate building attached to it for all his classic cars. He loves these cars. He gets to see them like once a year because he's in Miami. He desperately has wanted to end his career or get to retirement phase of life in L.A., but he doesn't want to retire. Now, all of a sudden, he could go back to L.A. and not have to retire with the franchise he became an icon with, and they don't call?
The reason
they don't call?
Jenny Buss, if her dad's alive, Pat Riley is in the picture. But Jenny Buss and some of the others, the Rambuses, as soon as they invite Pat Riley into the
They're room, out.
You get ready to find out who's not as smart as far as basketball as soon as these other people open their mouth.
It's unbelievable.
Jesus.
Finally, LeBron James, clean hat, made a rare appearance at the Lakers facility on Monday when the team announced Frank Vogel as their new head coach. Don't get used to that LeBron sighting, though. Despite rumors about how prominent his role will be in recruiting a free agent, we're now hearing LeBron is expected to stay in the background to avoid the perception he's running the Lakers. Nick, how involved does LeBron need to be this summer?
If the Lakers actually want LeBron to stay uninvolved in this or in the background, then, well, they're as crazy as an organization that has an opening at team president doesn't call Pat Riley. So
who
I guess
would have
or at least would have been interested in it. I guess I can't be shocked by anything at this point. But he's their only hope. Why would Kyrie Irving go to the Lakers unless it is LeBron saying, hey, man, let's go. The team we beat for a championship, that team's about to exist again, assuming Kevin Durant leaves. Mm-hmm. Let's try to run this back. Hey, Kawhi, I can look at you. I'm one of only a handful of people in the world that can look at you eye level as far as individual greatness. Let me sell you on why you should not worry about the reported dysfunction and team up with me. Like the Lakers app for a team that has made so many missteps in the public eye, they are obsessed with public perception.
Yeah.
You would think that that an organization obsessed with public perception at the very least would get the PR right. Instead, they're obsessed with public perception and keep doing things that damage their public perception. If you're a Laker fan, you have to hope that while this is being reported, that LeBron is actively in the background working his connections, working the phones, because it's the only hope the Lakers have.
Well, for one, if LeBron was not going to participate in free agency, people talk about this summer. Free agency's already started. These guys are already talking to each other. Agents are exchanging numbers. Agents are making plans. Like, you can't wait till June 30th at 6 p.m. when it kicks off. They moved off the kickoffs to the July 1st at midnight. They got a little smart. Well, let's just start at 6 o'clock,
right.
You know, so we don't have to stay up all night. But if you don't have LeBron James in the process, let's just say Nick and I are wrong and the Lakers are right. Who talks to Kawhi? So you don't have a conversation with KD, all right? So who talks to Kawhi? Who talks to Kyrie? Who sells them on the Lakers? Pelinka? Jenny Buss? Who do you have confidence in that can deliver a message as far as you coming here and winning the championship? They don't have that person. So the Lakers, man, the Lakers have a real, real problem. And they having a problem even if LeBron is involved in free agency.
And this is the part of, once again with the Lakers, where it is one thing to, and I understand this, to not want to bend over backwards to the whims of your best player. It is another thing to treat your best player differently than nearly every other organization treats their best players. When the Rockets wanted Chris Paul to consent to a trade there, essentially, it was essentially a free agent recruitment. Mm-hmm. You know who they had heavily involved? James Harden. When Kevin Durant was being recruited to Golden State, you know where the nickname the Hamptons Five came from? Mm-hmm. Well, it's the five guys who went to the Hamptons, the four guys to meet up with KD: Iggy, Dre, Steph, and Clay.
I asked someone close to the situation with the Knicks, well, if you are able to land KD, well, who else you going after? Who does KD want? So if KD's ever, wherever he goes, he's going to be involved. So now you got LeBron, greatest player that we've seen this generation.
Right.
You're not going to have him involved? Like, it's totally the opposite way of going about. When LeBron went to Miami, what happened? Him and D-Wade talked.
Right. Like, and once he was there, even though Miami has a very top-down, Pat Riley-down power structure, mm-hmm. LeBron helped recruit guys like Mike Miller. Helped LeBron even there, where Pat Riley has a vice grip of power, they were consulting with their best players on the tertiary guys to add. This is crazy. It is unlike the way any other team would be run with a player of this caliber or even a couple calibers down.
And I don't believe you can do it this way, because one of the advantages, if you have one of these mega stars, is that other guys want to come play with them, and they will do it for less. But if you don't put them in the process, these other guys can't talk guys into taking less money when they weren't involved in that.
Right.
That's part of winning championships, getting guys to buy in, veteran players who could make more money other places.
And the only place you can get a head start, Jenna, is with the players doing it. Because tampering, even though if it's looked the other way, you can't. The Lakers can't call Kawhi or Kyrie whose season's over.
Yes.
LeBron can. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, can you imagine how many things along the way would have been different had they let LeBron been involved? Between the coaching and maybe the general manager, maybe players coming in.
Now, I don't know if he would have called Pat Riley. And also, the hope about Pat Riley is that job ain't filled yet.
Well, yeah.
Okay.
But it doesn't look
they
like they're going to
they decided they're probably not going to have Pat Riley or no.
No one. No, Linda Rams right. Got it.
Let's turn our attention to some football in the NFL. Dak Prescott wants to remain the Cowboys quarterback for a long while. He confirmed this week that he is, in fact, talking to the team about his extension. The team made an offer. Dak Prescott says his representatives made a counteroffer. So much drama. Dak talked to the media after OTA practice, focusing his attention on the upcoming season.
Randall Cobb, Amari Cooper, Zeke Elliott, having Jason Witten back, young Michael Gallup coming along, and not even mentioning Tavon Austin and Noah Brown, guys that are helping. Incredibly talented group. It's going to make my job a whole lot easier. The way Kellen's presenting this thing is just, it's going to be fun. Just know you've got to get the ball to these guys and let them go do what they do best. So it's going to be fun in the OTAs, and can't wait to really get this thing going.
All right, CeCe, let's look at this team. Let's focus on the offense. What's going to be the biggest key for their offense this coming season?
The biggest key is trying to put the foundational of that offensive line. Last year during the season, they changed offensive line coaches. Travis Frederick, how healthy is he to be able to anchor that as a center, an all-pro center? Is he close to that ability? Because, Dak mentioned all the skilled guys, but if you can't get them the football, so for me, that offensive line is the number one thing. Continuity from an offense, I don't know what they're going to call. I don't know what the quarterback coach is going to teach. I don't know what kind of offense they're going to have, because we don't have a sample size with their quarterback coach and their offensive coordinator. They don't have a history in this league. So this offseason becomes very important. I do believe that they have more speed when you add Randall Cobb to your offense, but will they utilize it? Last year, I thought Michael Gallup, man, an emerging young player, him, Amari Cooper, and now Cobb, potentially Witten as the fourth or fifth guy, should be able to help you out in that red zone area that you struggle at. This should be the best offense that they've had since Dak has been there. So for me, if I'm Dak, I'm just trying to get acclimated to the new coaches, a couple of the new faces, looking forward going into year number four, hoping that it's my best season ever.
The Cowboys, you mentioned the other day, Jenna, they're going to – all 22 starters right now are scheduled to return. Maybe not as starters, but all 22 guys that started last year are slated to return. The coaching staff, there's some changes on the offensive coaching staff, but the head coach obviously still
stays intact.
So it's going to be mostly the same team. You just hope they get better. Where do they need to get better? You alluded to it. I've got the black and white numbers on it. They were the worst red zone team in football by an enormous margin. And that was before Amari got there and once Amari got there. Dak's red zone passer rating was a 96 anywhere on the field, dropped to an 85 in the red zone. Before Amari got there, they were 29th in touchdowns scored in the red zone. After he got there, they were 30th. First in goal all year long with without Amari. Dead last in touchdown percentage by an enormous margin. Best team in the league, the New Orleans Saints. First in goal, 85% of the time that results in a touchdown. That's the best. League average is 75%. The Cowboys, 52%. You have a first and goal, and half the time you're not scoring a touchdown. Their success rate, according to Warren Sharp, on first down inside the 10-yard line, dead last in football before Amari, dead last after Amari.
Very predictable what they're going to do.
Well, the key is that there was no change once you added the number one receiver. You're dead last before he gets there. You're dead last once he gets there. That means, it's about the play calling. Zeke Elliott, rushing champion. He had half the league's average of yards per attempt inside the 5-yard line. So that means the team knows you're running it. They stack up no matter how good you are. You have nothing you can do against that. The Cowboys, their offense died once it got inside the 20, and it rolled over and died once it got inside the 10. That cost them 2 or 3 wins last year. That's in between the 13-3 team and the team we had last year sneak into the playoffs with the divisional win. That's what the coaching staff has to address.
That's all play calling, CeCe? When you're ineffective in the red zone like that, once you've added speed to your offense, that means it's all play calling?
Well, I don't believe it's all play calling. I believe you have to be able to share the responsibility. For one, it's no identity. For one, once they get into the red zone, are they going to protect Dak? Are they going to utilize Dak as a dual threat? Because he's better as a dual threat. He is not a pure drop back passer. So they don't have an identity outside of Ezekiel Elliott. Teams pack the box. They got 8 guys in the box minimum. So they are not going to let you run. There is penetration in the goal line. It's easier. It's easier to defend. There's less space, and you got less of a playbook. Amari Cooper is a good receiver, but he is not a red zone difference maker. He's not a 50-50 jump ball guy. So if you have Amari Cooper in the red zone, what can you throw to him basically? You're going to basically only throw him a slant. But all the defenders are right in the middle of the field. He is not a guy that's going to go to the outside, by the pylon, just jump up over you. So you have to be able to scheme. You have to move that red zone out a little bit. When Randy Moss, we got him, we moved it out to the 40-yard line because it gave him more space to operate. We created some identity for other players. Now, Jason Witten, I don't think Jason Witten's a good football player. I do believe he's a great leader, and I do believe he can make a contribution in the red zone because you get a lot of man-to-man in the red zone, and he has one of the better matchups on the field. So let's see. New quarterback coach? Let's see. No experience? Let's see what the game plan is, what the theme is. You have to have a sure enough philosophy. There is a reason why I scored 130 touchdowns. There's a reason why Buddy Ryan said that's all he does is score touchdowns. Because we had a philosophy, once we pass the 25, we are getting ready to get Chris Carter the ball at least 2 times. You're going to have to be able to stop him. So every game, we had game plan where I would be in the slot, I'd be outside, I would try to find the weakest matchup in the red zone, and our offensive coordinator would take advantage of it. So let's see what the Cowboys draw up. Scheme is a part of it. Skill set is a part of it. Creativity is all a part of it. But it boils down to you need someone to make a play in the red zone, and the Cowboys didn't have that last year.
All right, good stuff there. Let's take a break. Coming up, Steph Curry, the baby-faced assassin. But is he the best player in the NBA? That's ahead on First Things First. Back Here first things first, Sports Illustrated senior writer Chris Mannix joins us.
And not just a writer for Sports Illustrated, does a great online television show for Sports Illustrated that I had to cancel on him yesterday. It's a little family situation. Everything's all good, but it was a great show, and I'll make it up to you, Mannix.
Appreciate it.
Check it out on SITV.
What?
What up, Chris?
You're just a weird dude, man.
I had to cancel on Mannix like an hour before the show started.
We're about to argue anyway.
I want to make it up for him.
Yeah.
All right, Mannix.
He wants to be yelled at. Hold on. It's my show, Nick. Hold on.
Kyrie Irving's time in Boston did not go according to script. The script that was supposed to include a title or at least a trip to the NBA Finals. Boston getting bounced in the second round. And now Kyrie's weighing his options for next season. According to reports, Kyrie, who wanted his own team and his own leadership, is now, quote, more open to teaming up with LeBron James in Los Angeles this summer. Mannix, are the Lakers the best option for Kyrie at this point?
I don't know how to answer that because I truly don't know what matters to Kyrie Irving. And that's what this boils down to. Because 2 years ago, as you pointed out there, Kyrie Irving wanted out of the shadow of LeBron James. He wanted his own team, and he wanted the chance to be the guy and win with his own franchise. And he was pretty much given everything that he wanted. Boston offered him an elite GM in Danny Ainge, a high-level coach in Brad Stevens, and a supporting cast that was good enough to get to a conference finals without him. So he had all these things, and now it does seem like he's soured. He doesn't want that as much anymore. The reason for going and pairing back up with LeBron James is that there's a comfortability there. There's a knowing of what not just it means to play with LeBron, but the entire experience. One thing that Kyrie had that was problematic in Boston, with Brad Stevens in particular, was that they were very kind of oil and water when it came to how you approach the regular season. Brad Stevens is a process guy. He is get better every single week, every single month, and have some of that those habits kick in when the season starts. Kyrie, or the postseason starts, Kyrie spent his formative years in Cleveland where it was basically like, all right, let's just get through the regular season and you know, it doesn't matter what seed we are, and we're going to go and turn that on. That's familiar. Like, he can do that with LeBron James again. I just think it would be an incredible acceptance that he's not capable of leading a team if he walks away from the situation he had in Boston.
Do you think he's capable of being the best guy and leader of a championship-level team now that we've seen all of this?
I think he's capable of it. That's probably as far as I would go. Look, last season, with his leadership, it was throw it against the wall and see what sticks. That was basically his motto. I thought he kind of figured a few things out as the season ended. He stopped criticizing his teammates publicly. That didn't work early in the year. And he took a very, like, everything's going to be okay approach that I think that team needed. And I think if he came back with that type of mindset, I think he'd be in a better place. You also have to remember, if he does go back to Boston, he's not going back to the same team. I know people get sick of hearing me say this, but if Kyrie comes back to Boston, they're getting Anthony Davis. It's as simple as that. They'll go all in and get Anthony Davis. So he'd be coming back to a Celtic team that would be markedly different than the one he left this year.
As far as free agency is concerned, Kyrie Irving's probably the wild card for me. He's the guy that I worry about. He's the least predictable. And I could see why things in Boston, even though if Kyrie had a wish list of five things, Boston had four of those things. All the things he said he wanted, own team, a coach, organization, support, a general manager, things that you mentioned, but it didn't work out. I don't believe, and there's a lot of people out there that think they're leaders. You know, when you're a leader, look over your shoulder and see who's following you. In this NBA season, wasn't nobody following Kyrie. So there's a lot of people out there, they swear up and down, oh, I'm a leader, I'm a leader of people. No, you're not, because ain't nobody trying to follow you. I do believe that if Kyrie is looking at this, and I believe that him looking at free agency, because he's put some feelers out there, and people are concerned about him. People are like, ah, I don't know. Outside of Brooklyn, I don't know of a team that's going to bring him in as the best player. All the other situations have something to do with KD or LeBron. I'm about people being self-aware. I don't mind Kyrie deciding, you know something? This is what's best for me. This is comfortable. All right? I know LeBron is the big brother and going to take care of a lot of that stuff, but people need to figure out how they can get the best out of themselves. And that's what Kyrie, to me, in free agency should be about for him.
So, Nick, these two mentioned a whole list of things, a litany of things that Kyrie wants, and no one said winning on there. How important is winning to Kyrie Irving the way we know winning is to Kevin Durant?
Well, I think that for Kyrie, it's all about the postseason and long postseason runs, and that means winning. Mm-hmm. And that Kyrie is not going to – the Atlanta Hawks could max him out. And I know they have Trae Young, but set that aside. Like, he is only going to go somewhere where winning is a true viable option. If you remember his initial list of potential teams to be traded to, the Knicks were the only one on that list that was not in a position to win that year, and they would have been the following year, freeing up cap space, signing a free agent. So I think winning and the ability to show out in the postseason, I think that can be a bit of a drug for guys. I think you all of a sudden go to some NBA finals. You have the moment Kyrie had, one of the five biggest shots in the history of the league. It can be hard to feel like, okay, February against the Suns, let's go full bore. And I understand that. Now, the reason LeBron can get away with it to a degree that Kyrie can't is LeBron has shown over more than a decade, well, don't worry, my level of play will be at this near MVP or MVP level in the regular season, and it will get even better in the postseason. What killed Kyrie was his level of play was the best it had ever been in his career of the regular season, and then in the postseason he had two good games, and the final four games were a disaster. But we could pull the tape from months ago. Before Brian Windhorst was talking about it, before LeBron went on Instagram and played with the song playing about the good old days, whatever that song was, 2 days after it was reported that Kyrie Irving and LeBron James had that reconciliation, that conversation, I came on this show and Celtic fans got real mad at me and I said, the door has been opened to Kyrie and LeBron rejoining. And it was not because of what had been publicly reported. It was because of the conversation that was had that only a very close circle knows about, which was a bit of a remember when. And remember when, it's a quote, Tony Soprano, can be a very powerful drug. And especially when the remember when is juxtaposed to the present day going so poorly.
Rock bottom where they were at that point when that conversation took place. The thing about LeBron, too, is that people forget LeBron was eviscerated for a long time. My former colleague, Adrian Wojnarowski, used to dub it the championship of me that LeBron was all about for many years. It wasn't until he won that first title and multiple titles in Miami that the perception of him started to change. The other variable we haven't talked about yet with Kyrie, and you talk about maxing out and, you know, the Atlanta Hawks can do it. Money is a variable with Kyrie Irving because all we heard, some of the things we heard in last year's postseason run was about how he was feeling this time last year, the knee issues, being on antibiotics, wondering when he was going to get back on the court, what his career was going to look like. There's a real chance that at the back end of whatever contract Kyrie Irving signs, that those knees are going to become a problem again, and you're going to be paying for past performance.
Yes.
Don't dismiss the thought that Boston offering the fifth year with an extra $45, $50 million as a factor in all this. Players I know have looked at John Wall, who may never be the same ever again.
Right. Said, good thing he locked in that
He took
that
the
line.
Bird in the hand. He could have said, like, I'm going to go to free agency, try to get the supermax. He took the bird in the hand, and now he's – nobody's really set for life, but he's set for a long time because he's got guaranteed money.
Yeah, I talked to a prominent NBA executive who said Kyrie Irving is young, but he's got an old body. Mm-hmm. And you have to understand that those last couple years that you might be taking on someone that's damaged goods or only just the shell of himself. But also, there's people that would take Kyrie if he was with Kevin Durant. If Kevin Durant said, I want Kyrie, then Kyrie's going to be on the team with KD.
Celtics will offer the full five-year
match. Yes.
Okay.
All right, Chris, stick around. Coming up, let's talk some conference talk. Will the Bucks turn things around in Game 5 against the Raptors? Next on First Things First. Back here with Chris Mannix. We're going viral. Check out Donovan Mitchell spending some time with the Mets yesterday. Looks like the 22-year-old star has a fallback career. Mets could certainly use him. Donovan Mitchell's dad works for the Mets, so perhaps it all runs through the family.
Oh, look at that.
Man, that's a good swing there.
I love Donovan Mitchell. Get him some help in Utah. That guy deserves to be going deep in the playoffs.
Or get the Mets some help in New York. Either one.
Yeah, that sophomore class didn't have a great season. They need to be playing some baseball this offseason. They weren't good, Nick.
No, they weren't. And Donovan Mitchell, part of their struggles in the postseason were Donovan Mitchell's inefficiency in the postseason.
But he needs another score. Like, teams are loading up on him. You need somebody to to give him more offense.
100%.
That's
absolutely
your Utah Jazz talk for the day.
Absolutely. And your New York Mets talk for the month.
For the month. And I can go on, but I got cut off twice, so yeah. I'm going to leave it at that. Hey, let's talk about the Eastern Conference Finals. Game 5 tonight in Milwaukee. Series tied at 2 games apiece. Bucks dropped the last 2, only the second time this season they've lost 2 games straight. They've not dropped 3 in a row yet, and they don't plan to start tonight. That is if they can stop a hobbled and overworked Kawhi Leonard. Chris Mannix, are we worried about the Bucks after losing 2 in a row?
I would just say this first. Shout out Kawhi Leonard, who is really hurt. Like, he's playing through something that
Do we know what exactly it is?
I don't know. I spent some time in Toronto after Game 4 talking to Danny Green about it, and he kind of insinuated that it had something to do with the previous injury. But, like, they're under
the one in San Antonio, the quad injury.
He sort of insinuated that might be the case. But whatever it is, it's real, and that they look at him every day in the locker room, like, are you going to be able to play? Are you okay? So we'll probably hear about it after the fact, what it actually is. Like, the Bucks, though, you can say the supporting cast has made a difference in this series. First 2 games, Brook Lopez was going crazy. The Bucks were getting good contribution from their bench. Mm-hmm. Game 4, Fred VanVleet was terrific. The supporting cast for Toronto was great. But if I'm looking at something that one player specifically, it's Eric Bledsoe. Like, the Bucks have an Eric Bledsoe problem right now. And he has been – this is the second straight postseason where Eric Bledsoe has struggled. And this is a guy that they committed 4 years, $70 million to, effectively saying that you are Giannis's point guard for the rest of his current contract with Milwaukee. And he's been bad to the point where you get into the fourth quarter and he's almost unplayable because he can't make perimeter shots. George Hill is a bigger factor in the late in games than Eric Bledsoe is. Malcolm Brogdon is a bigger factor late in games than Eric Bledsoe is. That's a guy that over these next 3 games, they're trying to pump him up. They're trying to, like, you know, breathe life back into him publicly. But he's got to play better. That's the wild card. If Eric Bledsoe continues along this style of play, Toronto's going to win this series. Because Kyle Lowry, too, has been great in this series.
And you guys have heard me say similar things to this before. Here's the good thing the Bucks have going for him. It is impossible for Bledsoe to play worse. He's not shooting a bad percentage. He's shooting an impossible percentage. Mm-hmm. He's 24% from the floor, not from three. He's 10%
You use that, and I always come back and say, it can get worse, Nick. Well, you know what? He can play game number 5 and game number 6, and the coach can bench him the way he did in the fourth quarter. So, like, it can get worse.
I understand that, but, man, it'd be tough. Like, if he has a 3-for-8 game, 1 of 3 from 3, that skyrockets his percentage.
He might not even get 8 shots tonight.
No, your point that they have to now, the Bucks, for the first time all year, and I know there's a great point you brought up earlier, Giannis can say we're going to do what we do. The coaching staff cannot in regards to it is now. This isn't a must-win game for Milwaukee, but it's the closest thing to a must-win game they've had all year. Game 5 in the series tied 2 games apiece, I don't think it can be a must-win game for either team, but it is the most critical moment of your season. And so if you have a player that is struggling that you would usually let try to play through it, you cannot. If you have a guy that you want to keep, like the way Bud has been very judicious with Giannis's minutes, you need to have a little looser hand on as far as letting him play 42, 43 minutes if he can and if you want him to. Milwaukee can look at this one of 2 ways. They can look at the optimistic way, which is, man, we're double overtime away from being up 3-0 and having the series over. The pessimistic way is we kind of stole game 1. Game 1, we were outplayed for 3 quarters and then killed them in the fourth. We're also a fourth quarter away from potentially being down 3-1 in this series. And so Milwaukee has an issue that every team is going to have when they play a team with Kawhi Leonard on it, which is he can almost eliminate your best player, unlike any perimeter defender we have seen in this league since Scottie Pippen, where he can just say, I am the rare, generational, non-rim defender who can actually dramatically affect percentages, dramatically affect how you want to run your offense, because that is the type of defensive presence I am. Marcus Smart's first team all defense, and I'm happy for him. He can't do that. The greatest defenders in the league can't do that except for Kawhi Leonard.
Where the series is right now, Chris Mannix, how much does experience factor in or the lack thereof for this Bucks team?
I think experience benefits Toronto greatly.
Yes.
Because of what Kawhi's been through. And I look at up and down the Raptors roster, they've had a lot of postseason failures, but they've been to one guy and one team. Like, when they've played other teams in the playoffs, they've had a lot of success. And I bring up Kyle Lowry because he has been maybe the most maligned guy of the bunch that's still there over the last few years. He is dramatically outplaying Eric Bledsoe in this series.
Yes.
He has accepted the challenge of picking up the slack for Kawhi. When you go inside that locker room in Toronto and you talk to these guys about Kawhi, they know that he's not the same player. It's hard to see out there at times on the floor because, as Serge Ibaka told me, he just kind of plays at his own pace at all times.
Yes.
So you're not entirely sure what's wrong with him at given moments, but they see it out there. And Kyle Lowry in three of these four games has really stepped up and made big plays for that team. So the experience on the Toronto side, I think, is more valuable than maybe the inexperience on the Milwaukee side.
Well, we're going to see the experience of the head coach to see if he makes some adjustments, because you can't continue to have a regular season philosophy when everything changes in the postseason. The number one thing that I'm probably going to change is I might put Brogdon back into the starting lineup. He's been impressive. Didn't have a good game number four, but in every quarter that he's been in, except game number four, he's been outstanding. So we can't forget what a good player he was before they got hurt. And I got to change my philosophy as far as Giannis. Their typical, how they're going to attack Toronto and Kawhi, they give Giannis the ball at the top of the key, have him try to penetrate to be able to either get to the rim or dish out. That's what they did all season. The difference is now he's not getting a great shot. So you know what I do? Get the ball to my point guard. I tell Giannis, go in the low box, and I throw him the ball 3 to 5 feet away from the bucket. Don't have him dribbling to Kawhi. That's his strength. All right? He has an advantage when he plays against front court players, Giannis, out on the perimeter. He does not have an advantage playing against Kawhi on the perimeter trying to put the ball on the ground. So put him on the box with a live dribble and have Kawhi defend that. I believe he'll get a favorable whistle, and he's got to be able to go to the line and be able to knock those things down, Chris.
And, Nick, you said, I think it's a must-win for Milwaukee.
Yes.
I don't know how they go to back to Toronto for a game six.
They've only lost two games twice this year.
And they've never lost three in a row. I understand your guys' points entirely. The reason I do not think it's a must-win for Milwaukee is because they have home court, they have the best player, and they are the better team. So
They have the best player. Okay. Kawhi's been the better player in this series.
Kawhi was certainly the better player in Game 4 and Game 3. Giannis was certainly the better player in Games 1 and Games 2. So we can do the tail of the tape if you want. I don't think
there's a team in the NBA have home court advantage Game number 5. If they lose that, because it's the best of three now.
Yeah.
You know, you want to get a chance to take advantage of your home court. That's, man, Game number 7. At home. That's why this game becomes a must-win game, Chris.
And just to button up the Bledsoe discussion, like, when the dust settles on this season one way or the other, like, this series and this postseason is a referendum on Bledsoe, because this Bucks team is about to become extraordinarily expensive.
Yep.
Because you have
Malcolm
Brogdon.
Yep.
You have George Hill on an $18 million non-guarantee where you have to decide whether to keep him.
Mm-hmm.
If Eric Bledsoe can't show that he's capable of being a championship-level point guard, you might have to think about life without Eric Bledsoe.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.